Welcome to episode 140 of Practical Defense, Training for Flexibility. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addix. We have a fantastic episode this week. Our guest is Thomas Kors, author of several books and DVDs on strength training and flexibility. His most well-known book is Stretching Scientifically, and his most well-known DVD is The Secrets of Stretching. Thomas is also a fellow columnist for Taekwondo Times magazine. In the interview, we discuss training methods that increase your power and flexibility while also reducing your risk of self-inflicted injury during a criminal assault. One of my concerns, which has also been expressed to me many times over the years, is what do I do if I pull a muscle in a fight? When we work out in practice, it's always with a good warm-up and some stretching. However, when you're in a spontaneous confrontation, you don't get a warm-up. So how do you train for that? Using Thomas's methods, you can build strength and increase your flexibility while at the same time being able to bring full force to bear without risk of injury without a warm-up. You can achieve this with proper strength training and dynamic warm-ups and very little traditional stretching. It's a fascinating look into the physiology and biomechanics of the human body. But before we get into the interview, I wanted to bring up something that I had forgotten to mention on the last full episode. In episode 138, I mentioned that we were at our 3-year anniversary. I also wanted to include a look at the early start of the show, you know, before we even took it on the air. What I meant to include, and forgot, were some of the names that I was considering for the show. So here are some name choices for what eventually became Practical Defense. Peril's Asylum. Street Smart. Street Survival. Real Street Defense. Street Smart Survival. Simple Defense. Safety First. And Survive. Of the ones that didn't make it to the final cut, my favorite actually is Peril's Asylum. Unfortunately, that one tested as the least popular of the names. Oh, well. Practical Defense is a great name because it summarizes the entire show in 2 words. It's really kind of tough to get better than that. Okay, now on to the interview with Thomas Kors. But before we jump into it, I have to explain that I messed up. I ended the interview, and then we were chatting afterwards, and I remembered that I forgot to ask another question. So what we did was record that segment, and I've tacked it on at the end. So when you think the interview is over, there's actually about another 10 minutes still to go. Yeah, I know, a bad interviewing technique. However, I do remind you that you get what you pay for, and this show is free. Alrighty, so on to the interview with Thomas Kors. Welcome back. And today we have an interview with Thomas Kors. So thanks, Thomas, for being on the show.
You're welcome.
Tell us a little bit about your background.
I was studying physical education, sports training in Poland in the 70s. And then I moved to USA with some detours here and there. And so I am, by education, a PE teacher and judo instructor. Being a PE teacher means that I can demonstrate well techniques of most Olympic sports, know lead-up exercises for all their techniques, that I know methods of teaching and conducting physical conditioning for most of the sports, because the sports, the most Olympic sports, were the foundation of the physical education system in former Soviet bloc. Apart from PE education, I was during the studies practicing judo and obtained instructor credentials, and that was extra curricular activity. Nevertheless, it was done in the same setting, you know, with the same systematic way as the other subjects. And after emigrating to USA as a political refugee, I was looking for something to do that wouldn't be too hard for me, would earn me enough money to be comfortable, and that would allow me to do what I pretty much like to do. And I was looking at various publications on various aspects of sports training and PE, and among them martial arts magazines, and I noticed that there is a need for good instruction on practically everything, but flexibility seemed for me to be the easiest thing to sell because it's so easy to advertise. You know, how do you advertise, let's say, high jump or reach jump? Everybody, you know, it's difficult to show a picture that convinces people. And with flexibility, very easy. Do the straddle split between the chairs and you prove the point. The range of motion is here and the strength is here. And this I showed in my ads. I was selling through those ads first a book published in 1985. Soon after, I think in 86 or even or 87, I think 86, a video on stretching called Stretching Scientifically, just like the book. Then another video called Secrets of Stretching, where I showed what I initially considered an obvious thing, namely incorporating lifting weights, generally speaking, resistance training together with stretching. And so I was responding to the demand from customers who turned out, to my surprise, didn't do proper resistance training. They were buying, say, book on stretching or the video on stretching, and their problems, they like not progressing fast enough, were having their source in not knowing how to incorporate weights or whatever resistance.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things I'd like to talk to you about today, is because from a self-defense perspective, we need to develop strength and speed. And one of the things that you pioneered was the high kick without stretching. And one of the, like, for example, one of my concerns is if I was ever in a street confrontation, you don't get a chance to warm up before those. I've always been concerned with, well, what happens if I'm in a street confrontation and I kick somebody and I pull a muscle? Yes. Or I incapacitate myself while defending myself. And then now all of a sudden I've lost the ability to use my leg or use it effectively. I can't run anymore. And so what I wanted to do was talk to you about your method, because I'm actually a fan of yours. I have your book and I have your DVD and I really, really like them. But I wanted to share that with my listeners about the methods that you can use to train, to use the resistance training, to use the weight training, to use the stretching to protect themselves and protect their bodies in a street confrontation.
Well, I don't know where to begin. Let me begin at the very end.
Okay, that's a good place, I guess.
How to make sure that when you kick without a warm-up, you don't pull a muscle? Well, the first obvious answer is read my book, right? And apply the information.
And the book is Stretching Scientifically.
Yeah. But seriously, muscles respond to resistance training specifically. Pretty much everybody knows how to bulk up. You see all those people preening in front of mirrors in those gyms, you know, with all this shiny stuff around. the bodybuilders, you know, the men with cleavage, the men who want to grow big breasts, and I don't know, maybe for breastfeeding. Big, bulky. Very easy. Just take, well, considerable weight and pump. Especially stressing the end of motion with the maximum flexion of the involved joints, or you know, when you close or when you bring attachments of a target muscle as close to the origin as possible. That bulks them up. But you can increase volume of a muscle by doing something similar but different, by stressing the tension at the beginning of movement, when the attachment and origin of the muscle are far away from each other. This, you know, the mechanism of it was revealed in the 60s by a scientist, Goldspink, who found that when muscles are tensed in a stretched position, sarcomeres, the building blocks of muscle cells, are added at the, I don't remember exactly where, at the end of the muscle cell, you know, at the extremes or in the middle. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where they are added. What matters is that muscle fibers and thus whole muscles become longer, as they are also becoming stronger.
Oh, so you're saying that you use, I know, because when you lift a lot of weights, the people like to bulk up because it shortens the muscle.
Well, muscle responds to stress specifically depending on the kind of stress. If you are stressing muscles in extended position, then that's where they will be strong by whatever means. Who cares? You know, maybe by growing extra sarcomeres in the muscle cells, or by magic. I don't care. What I care is the outcome. But if you stress them in not fully extended positions, that's where they will be most strong. By growing more sarcomeres elsewhere in the muscle, maybe by hyperplasia, meaning splitting the muscle cells, by growing more muscle cells. So, you know, your bulk will grow. But really, you know, just this is not really to the point of getting more flexible and stronger for kicking. But really, when you lift weights in full range of motion, you will get increase of strength practically throughout the whole range of motion, and you will get increase of muscle volume or mass. And just, you know, if you concentrate on those tensions in extended positions, that's where most results will be visible as far as strength increases. But it's not like there will be no gain over the rest of the motion. Your muscle mass will also increase. It just will look slightly different than on a bodybuilder.
So this type of muscle building and strength training actually is more practical then, because you have the strength over a greater range of motion.
Well, bodybuilders have figured out that to get increases in bulk, they have to feel the burn. And they feel it most in mid-range or the end range, mid to end range. Okay, that's what they stress at. That's what, you know, that's what I was seeing in the gyms. If you've seen different, tell me. So that also allows them to lift quite heavy weights or lift moderate weights great number of times, because they want to feel that burn. I won't go even into what, you know, what causes the burn and what are other consequences, how come bodybuilders are generally way weaker than weightlifters who who are not as bulky, but lift, you know, much, much greater weights. I mean, Olympic weightlifters. And on the other hand, if you lift weights from, you know, through the full range of motion, from the full extension, then that limits the amount of weight that you can lift. And it limits also the number of repetitions with the given weight that you can safely move. You can try it someday. Okay? Take the weight that you can do whatever, for example, half squat with, to do, you know, as many repetitions as it takes you to failure, and now try to repeat that performance with deep squat. See what happens.
So you're saying that the deep squat, you'd be able to do fewer repetitions than the half squat?
Yeah, with the same weight.
And that's because you're pulling in more of the muscle, and so it gets tired more easily?
Yeah, well, do it. The proof is in the motion. Or you can do something, you know, like this bicep curl. Do bicep curl with, you know, from mid-motion to end of range of motion, and then try to repeat the same performance next day or whatever, whenever you rest up enough, with full range of motion, you know, beginning from full extension. See what happens.
Now you're saying that adding that full range of motion is what increases your flexibility? The additional sarcomeres at the end of or within the muscle itself increase your flexibility?
Yeah. And it doesn't matter, you know, if it's what Goldsping discovered or something completely different. Maybe you are also stretching the fascia around the muscle. Maybe. Who knows? And who cares? What matters is that you are getting stronger at the greater range of motion. So now you can swing your limb at the greater range of motion, and it still can exert force without tearing muscles, because they are not feeling as much stretch as if you never done those exercises.
Okay, so to see if I understand it properly. So because you've train the muscle to provide and gain strength even at the extended ranges.
Yeah.
When you kick at the low ranges, for example, in a, you know, a street defense situation, because you're actually only at the shorter end, there's less likely to incur damage to yourself.
That too, but you can kick at the, you know, at your full range of motion too.
So you can kick fully.
See,
if
for
you
instance,
kick to the head.
Yeah. Yes, for instance, if you can sit in a straddle split and then get up without using your arms by sliding, walking your legs together by tensing your inner thighs, well, then you have enough length of the muscle to tense it at that extension without any discomfort. So when you kick, you know, something, you'd have to have an accident, for instance. Somebody would have to kick your, well, that's not really an accident in fighting, somebody would have to kick your supporting leg from underneath you in the, you know, in such a direction that you would oversplit. Well, then something bad could happen.
That actually happened to me.
Yeah, so don't do that.
Yeah, I was doing the splits and I was working on it, and I was about an inch and a half off the ground, and my foot was sweaty and my foot slipped and my knee separated and hit the ground. That was 15-something years ago.
So you damaged your knee or your groin?
Knee.
Or what?
Damaged the knee. It was all on my knee.
Well, it should be easy to deal with. We probably have managed to deal with it since then.
Yeah, I built muscle around it and I just work around it.
Yeah. Deep squats and, I mean, not initially, but eventually deep squats and straight leg deadlifts help to keep the knee well, you know, stabilized.
Yes, I love the deadlift. The squats for me, when I go deep on them, it is painful the next day. My knee is sore the next day. I don't have that problem when I do the deadlifts.
Yeah. So
in fact, in the last episode, I was advocating the deadlift with caution and with training.
So I think I answered the end of your, you know, end of your question, how to do it. You know, when you can exert considerable force at the full extension of the muscles that are going to be involved in your technique, then you should be safe. But the rest is the matter of tactics. And here is the whole long story. You say, we are used to kick with a warm-up, but now on the street we cannot use a warm-up. Why are you used to kicking with warm-up only? That's bad teaching. You know?
In what way?
Well, you come into a class of some martial art that emphasizes kicking, and so you see those kicks. You are explained that these are weapons, right, to be used in self-defense. You're even shown that. So you want to learn them. And then the enlightened teacher doesn't teach you how to use them without warm-up, doesn't train you how to do it without warm-up. You've been had.
Okay. I can see where you're coming from on this.
You know, yes, warm-up is a very good thing. We need warm-up when we learn something new, you know, to go through lead-up exercises to smooth out the movement. When we are warmed up, our muscles are better activated, better coordinated. Their action is timed better. That makes for more efficient movement and more effective movement. You can exert more force or kick or punch stronger with less effort, with less of unneeded muscle tension. After the workout, thanks to the good warm-up, you are less likely to be sore, or if sore, then you will be less sore, precisely because the warm-up allowed you to move more efficiently, with less tension, less soreness. But still, you should be able to throw a few kicks, just like you can throw a few punches, without any warm-up, once you learn them. Okay? After a few workouts, when you got the form of whatever, jab or a cross or whatever, right, you should be able to throw it without going through lead-up motions and without warm-up. Same with kicks, unless you have a bad teacher and you've been hit.
So how would you do that? How would you start the martial arts class if you don't begin with calisthenics and stretching?
Well, first there is dynamic warm-up that gradually leads up to the target technique of a day. And we just flow from, you know, the first, you know, assuming the stance that will lead to the next movement and so on, we just flow through it. It's all dynamic movements. Then we practice the technique thanks to this dynamic warm-up at increased range of motion till we get the range of motion that is maximal required for a given technique, or maximal allowable for this group of students, let's call them. You know, maybe, you know, they are, say, beginners. They don't have the full range of motion, let's say, to kick somebody at their height or higher. For instance, you know, whatever kick could beginners do. For example, I would, with beginners, I begin with, of course, you know, stances, footwork, hands, and then the first leg technique is the knee, straight knee. And let's say these are beginners, they have difficulty kicking at the upper chest or face level with the knee. So until then, we'll be practicing this knee at the level of the solar plexus at the most. as their range of motion increases, you know, in course of several workouts, will get higher. When we get that, we'll introduce another kick, maybe a front kick, with proper knee chambering, which by this time will be very easy. Going back to those knee kicks, you know, at the level when they are still at doing knee kicks, at the end of the workout, when they are all very sweaty, about 90 minutes or, well, 1 hour, maybe 1 hour, 10 minutes from the opening of the workout, we begin to wind down. And that's the time to do some strength exercises, among them those that combine stretching and strengthening. Exercises that result in greater strength and flexibility at the same time. You know, a couple of months or less passes, and you can see that these people are now ready to practice front kick at the face level, side kick at the face level, roundhouse kick at the head level. No problem. And now, when they already got the form right, also, the form of the kicks have to be biomechanically sound, has to be such that it can be done easily without warm-up on the most economical path to the target, the least exposing to the counterattack and so on. When they have learned this technique and they can do it on command during the workout with warm-up, you know, like what I mean is doing it on command. You ask somebody, you know, throw a sidekick at high level, and they do. They didn't have to do, you know, like one attempt, two attempts, just right away. Here it is. Proper path from the ground through the chamber to the target. When the technique is learned that way, now normal students, okay, not slackers, by that time they will already on their own practice those things without warm-up, just because they think I'm learning to use a weapon. So far I've been using it in a class after a warm-up, after a proper instruction with all the lead-up exercises. How about if I can do it without any preparation? If the form of the kicks is correct, they will have no problem. If the form is wrong, and I explain the differences between the right and wrong form for the kicks in my column at stadion.com, and you can read it for free. If the form is wrong, the kicks won't work. They will need long warm-up just to be able to reach, say, target above their shoulder or at the shoulder level. But apart from those who are motivated by self-defense and on their own will practice these things as soon as they feel confident in their form of movement, the instructor can introduce those exercises. You know, like after greeting, ask the class, mid-level kick, no warm-up, okay? A few, whatever, three on a side, okay? And now the whole warm-up begins and we proceed with regular workout. Another workout, this time not mid-level, high level, shoulder and above, okay? Who can kick higher without the warm-up? If the form of kick is right, and if they were trained right, if the exercises at the end of the workout, the ones for strengthening and stretching were done right, there will be no problem.
What is the risk, though, if they don't have proper training and they try and do things like that?
Then they will get hurt.
I guess that's a simple answer. What about building explosive power? In the last episode, I went over fast twitch versus slow twitch skeletal muscle.
Yeah. Well, I don't concern myself with fast twitch, slow twitch, because when you see the, you know, when you realize the difference between the two. It's as far as contraction speed. It doesn't matter the contraction, to me, it doesn't matter what the contraction speed is or the difference between slow twitch muscle fibers and fast twitch muscle fibers. They're fast enough. You don't have to hurry, you have to be in on time, especially in fighting.
Okay, I can understand that. Don't have to be in a hurry, you have to be on time. Okay.
And the second thing is that you should concern yourself with your reaction time and your overall speed of movement. And explosive exercises, if you are prepared with proper conditioning for those exercises, they will teach you how to move explosively. And it doesn't matter if you have more soft, slow twitch muscle fibers or more fast twitch muscle fibers. People usually have 50-50 mix. The difference is how well you did your explosive power exercises and how well you were prepared for them too. If you were not prepared, you will develop chronic injuries from overstressing your tendons, joints, and so on. The explosive power exercises teach how to use elasticity of your musculoskeletal system to get more power output, to get you there faster with less effort than otherwise. Stadion has published a book on explosive power training, beginning, who is the beginning, with simple, dynamic, non-explosive exercises and progressing through plyometrics through increasingly, okay, it's from simple lifts, other exercises such as even push-ups, to increasingly dynamic exercises, to eventually very advanced plyometrics. And the book is called Explosive Power and Jumping Ability for All Sports, and it covers pretty much, again, all Olympic sports. And in addition, there is kickboxing, if I remember correctly. Kickboxing is there too. So wrestlers, judoka, boxers, kickboxers, track and field athletes, gymnasts, ball players will find their sets of exercises for their sport. And generally, when you want to increase explosiveness of your techniques, say punches or kicks, you just go gradually hitting harder and harder. You take a heavy bag and strike it initially light, but, you know, like with increasing penetration until you're satisfied, until you know that this punch or this kick is strong enough for your purpose. It will break the ribs, or if it whacks, say, somebody's thigh, the opponent will go down with deep hematoma. Okay, fine. You know, that if you punch somebody on the side of a rib cage, you will numb the long pectoral nerve. Okay? So the arm will drop. When you kick them on the side of the thigh, you know, they will drop and feel like throwing up. You can tell by the, you know, by the way the bag behaves on contact. But just do it gradually. Begin light and just don't dawdle. Don't let your limb stay there for too long. When you punch, imagine that the bag is white hot, because when you retreat your striking limb fast, when you concentrate on retreating the limb fast upon a strike, upon a contact, your way in increases too. There it is.
Yeah, there are 2 points that I want to bring up here. One is that a recurring theme that you have that I've heard throughout the entire interview is that it takes time. You always have to start light and eventually move up. And a couple of times you mentioned that it takes several months in order to build up these skills. It's not something that you can get overnight.
Well, there is a tale of a student approaching a kung fu teacher, Chinese boxing teacher. And the student wants to learn boxing skills fast. Has some purpose, whatever that be, self-defense or revenge or whatever. The teacher says, okay, I can accept you. That will take 3 years to learn. And the student says, but I don't have that much time. I'm in a hurry. Oh, says the teacher, in that case, it will take 9 years. As far as stretching, you know, this takes very short time, relatively. A couple of months. Unless somebody is completely neglecting, you know, their physical shape, the out of shape, totally, and then suddenly they want, you know, within 2 months reach full split and being able to get up from the split from the ground without first being able to do a decent squat with their body weight on their shoulders. That would be difficult, if not impossible. But somebody who, you know, who is normal and exercises somehow is able to lift equivalent of their body weight in a squat, does deep squats, does deadlifts, with, again, at the very least, their own body weight, we have no problem, you know, reaching this goal within a couple of months. Explosiveness is slightly different because you can just, your listeners can just approach a boxing heavy bag and kick it, say, at the bottom with a shin. And then they will understand that it takes time to be able to do that at full force.
Okay.
It's pretty much like kicking a brick wall.
That's gotta hurt.
Generally speaking, you know, you were interested in application of your training in self-defense. And because of your background in kicking arts, we were talking about kicks, as if that would be the preferred weapon. As far as self-defense is concerned, you have to learn both reactions to an unexpected surprise attack, which might be your fault that attack has occurred, that it is surprising. Maybe you did not check the room you were entering. Maybe you were standing too close to somebody. But stuff happens. And you have to have an instinctive response to minimize damage from that surprise attack. And that will not include any kicking or punching. It will just be a defensive movement that minimizes the damage and within that split of second allows you to figure out what happened, you know, where are you, where is he or she or them, and now what. Kicking and punching and such are for later, when the situation is clear to you, somebody's in front of you and they are arguing or you know, attacking you, challenging you. That's when your kicks come in and so on. But you have to have first this means of minimizing the initial damage, and the same moves, the same techniques or instincts will serve you well when things go bad during a fight, if the fight is inevitable. When you're in a clinch, when you receive a punch and you stagger, okay? What to do then to buy yourself time, or to even instantly, I have difficulty with some English words, to turn the situation around. When you are grabbed, what to do? And these are very simple moves, no haya, no kicking, no complex movements at all, but you have to have them. And with right training, you will have no problem kicking and punching and so on, doing all those things that you do in your regular workouts. If your conditioning is right, if the teacher that you're learning from is knowledgeable about conditioning, combining flexibility with strengthening, combining technical and tactical workout with conditioning, you will have no problem. If you have a teacher who is routinely doing static stretches at the beginning of a class, well, then maybe you change a teacher or live with the consequences. So there. And those instinctive skills, I don't know if it's a right expression, instinctive moves that nullify the first attack, and sometimes not the first attack. I show them on the DVD Basic Instincts of Self-Defense, also available from stadion.com. Any more questions?
No, I actually think that pretty much answers the questions. It's been a fantastic and very enlightening interview, and I really appreciate your time.
Well, you're very welcome.
And again, I recommend everybody check out the material on stadion.com. The website is stadion.com, stadion.com. And could you explain to us what stadion means?
It's a Greek name for a stadium. And it also is a name of an old, ancient Olympic event where athletes in armor, helmets, breastplates initially, and shin guards and shields, and eventually just in helmets and shield with shields, and I think still with greaves or shin guards, were running a distance of approximately 200 yards. And I choose this as a name for the publishing company because right away we were publishing materials on sports and martial arts. And that event, well, combines them very obviously.
So a foot race in full armor.
Yep.
That had to have been tough.
It was like all the events of Olympic, ancient Olympics, except perhaps poetry contest. All of them had very close connection to the battlefield. But this one, more obvious than others, because it was happening in full armor. The others say a javelin throw, a discus throw. You know, discus is a weapon. Sprint, and so on. You know, all those are important, and wrestling and boxing and so on, are important for a warrior. Sprint in full armor was applied during the battle as the rows of Greek warriors would approach the enemy and then would rush. But they could rush from a distance that was not expected by the enemy, from slightly further than the enemy expected. And they still had enough breath to fight after making contact. That's the importance of the event. That's what, you know, that what the event was testing and preparing for.
More speed and mobility than your opponent.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, again, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us. And again, I recommend everyone check out the material on the website. And I've been a fan for several years now of your material.
Well, thank you very much. And I look forward to hearing the edited version.
All right, great. Thanks again.
You're welcome. Bye.
Okay, here's a little something after the interview. We were discussing some things after we finished recording, and I remember that I meant to ask about the back and the role that the back plays. So it's a little choppy this time, but we're going to continue. So, Thomas, please explain to me what role the back plays in strength and kicking and balance.
The back must provide a solid, stable basis for your kicks because your main kicking muscles are attached to your lower back. If your lower back is not stable, you cannot kick fast and it's difficult to kick high. And if you keep on kicking, you have back pain. That's putting it very briefly. To stabilize your back, you have to train your whole trunk for strength and stability. And one of the best exercises for it is deadlift. If you do eventually heavy deadlifts, like with twice your body weight, and you do them correctly, again, you can look up at stadion.com column, pictures and explanations how a correct deadlift looks like, how to do it. When you do the deadlift correctly, you have to engage your whole trunk in the correct way. The whole trunk will be solid like a brick. And with the strength that you need for heavy deadlifts, if you have that strength, you won't have any difficulty kicking high and kicking powerful and so on. I won't go into the anatomical considerations, like what happens if the back extensors, which work statically during the deadlift, they hold the back in the right correct curve. What happens if they are not strong enough to balance the hip flexors that pull on the front of the lower back? The bottom line is when these are not in balance, your back will hurt and you won't be able to kick very long. Another thing, apart from concerning yourself with your lower back stability, is mobilizing your thoracic chest, the part of the thoracic spine, the part of the spine that your ribs are attached to. Because of modern lifestyle and because of the school, like elementary school, high school, and so on, many people have a kyphotic curve, exceeding kyphotic curve in the thoracic spine, meaning they are bent too much forward. When they are bent too much forward, the lower back compensates by being bent too much the other way. So it's like an S curve.
Yeah, and an overextension.
Yeah, the more your upper back is bent, like curved, so it's not straight. So your upper back is and shoulder blades are not nice and straight. The more the lower back will curve forward, like its lumbar lordosis will be excessive. That will predispose you to injuries of the lower back when you kick. I think that will do for now. Just strengthening the lower back, you have to correct posture, pay attention to positioning yourself right, positioning your whole spine correctly, shoulder blades back, chest forward, chin down, keep the small of the back from being totally flat or exceedingly bent, just in a most economical position, one that is good for long standing and so on. And make sure that your spine is in that correct position during all your lifts, especially in deadlifts, and in deep squats too, and in overhead lifts too, and in overhead squats too. And then you'll have no trouble kicking at all.
Great. Yeah, in the last episode, I talked a lot about the deadlifts and how much I love that exercise. And I discovered it because I found it was easier on my knees. But I really stressed how difficult it can be and how important proper form is for performing that exercise.
Yes, and a simple way to learn a deadlift is, well, first of all, begin with a broomstick, even. Not even an empty bar. It's broomstick will do. Begin at the top, at the end position, with, again, as I said, chest forward, shoulder blades retracted and depressed, meaning pull your right shoulder blade to your left pocket, back pocket, and your right shoulder blade to your left shoulder blade to your right back pocket, chin down so you are not having this position typical for people with so-called upper cross. You might refer your readers to pages on the internet that show this affliction, which is very typical for people who spend a lot of time sitting, where the chin is way, way forward, away from the base of the neck. The neck has a very pronounced lordotic curve. It follows, then there is an excessive kyphotic curve in the thoracic spine, and then again excessive lordosis in the lumbar spine. So you want to stay as straight as possible. Ears over shoulders, chin close to throat, chest out, belly not protruding, so there is slight tilt of the pelvis to keep the small of the back from being excessively bent. And that's your end position. From that position, go down, bending only at the hip joints, like this is the only hinge in your whole body. It's the only hinge over which you will move your upper body. And bring the broomstick just above your toes or mid foot, and now return to the initial position. That's your technique of the deadlift. And then when you do that right several times, you can begin to do it with an empty bar. And if you do it right and you don't have any issues with your back or your lower back, upper back, then you can gradually add weight till you get to something decent, like maybe twice your body weight. And don't tell me that twice your body weight is a great deal, because there are people who lift 3 or 4 times their body weight without kvetching. And from kickers, it's between 1.5 body weight, to twice body weight for a few repetitions should be required. That's it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much again, and I appreciate that, and I'll tack this on at the end.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and I will hear from you within days, I suppose.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro Second Amendment, pro gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zoom Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
Welcome back, everybody. You can find links to the articles, books, and DVDs that Thomas mentioned in the library section of my website and in the show notes. There's a lot of great information in there. Now, don't forget that in January, I'm hosting a Massad Ayoub seminar on the appropriate use of lethal force. It's called the Armed Citizens Rules of Engagement. You can find all the details, location, and cost on my newly redesigned website at alexhaddix.com/mag20. That's MAG20. Pre-registration is required, so be certain to sign up now and reserve your seat. We, of course, still have our 20% discount on subscriptions to Taekwondo Times magazine. Just enter our exclusive promo code of PRACDEF01 at checkout. The subscription to the print edition of the magazine includes digital copies as well. You can find the promo code and a link in the show notes. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexhaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe.
Tom Gilmore lives on a farm. There's a storm on the way, so he's boarding up the windows of his house.
Haley Williams lives in an apartment. It's a beautiful day. She's making her usual monthly donation to the American Red Cross.
Tom doesn't know a tornado will leave his family with no place to go.
Haley doesn't know her gift will help give Tom's family shelter.
When you support the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com.